Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thanks for being with us again on yet another Thursday evening. And we have another exciting and fascinating guest. Paul Reinig is with us, and he has just an incredible story of healing and transformation in this lifetime, and we'll be talking to him in a few minutes. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing. And there's a lot in the news about various religions and what they believe and whether they believe their toes are being stepped on. And on this show, I really have a very few core understandings that is the core of what I talk about in the show, and in many ways the core of what the guests talk about. And those are derived from metaphysics, which is the study of the non-physical, and shamanism, which is very practical work in that non-physical world. But it also comes from the very, very basic teachings of almost all religions. And one of those teachings is expressed in many different ways. It's called the law of attraction. It's called karma. It's called all kinds of things. It's the idea that what's going on inside of you and what you focus on in your mind and with your emotions is what is outpictured and becomes your experience in your life. It's expressed as above, so below, as within, so without. As you believe in your heart, so shall it be. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And that one really gets past people. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Because whatever it is that you do to them is what will be done to you. You're going to attract it to yourself. And the one that I find absolutely fascinating and usually ignored by most of the people who have it as part of their spiritual tradition is judge not, that ye be not judged. And that's a really fascinating one because people interpret it as, you know, it's not mine to judge, God will judge. But if you look at it from this perspective, judge not that you be not judged means do not judge anyone else or yourself, because the only judgment that will ever be done unto you is your own judgment of yourself. It's really about forgiveness. It's really about not judging yourself. In a very practical and simple way, when you look at all of this, kindness to others can only be kindness to yourself. Because whatever you're doing, whatever's going on inside of you is what you'll do in the world, and whatever you're doing in the world and whatever you're thinking about and holding in your mind and focusing on is what you're going to attract to yourself and see more and more of and experience more and more of. So in the most practical way, most practical spirituality, as the Dalai Lama has often simplified his explanation of what his religion is, he says, my religion is kindness. And that's so incredibly simple and so profound, but not often what's being taught. There's also an element of self-interest in any act of kindness. So you're not really doing something for the other person. You're doing it for that person as somebody you attracted into your life so that you could do the kindness for them, so that you could experience that, so that you could be kind to yourself, so that you could get quieter, so that you could be more loving. So in spite of what Ayn Rand and all of her followers have come to believe, all the sociopathic beliefs that come from her philosophy, self-interest is really about being kind to others, taking care of others, do unto others as you would have done unto you. Really interesting, very, very simple, but so, so profound. So just tonight's metaphysical musing, something to toss around in your mind and think about a little bit. And the other thing I talk about all the time is walkabout, and we will be using that as a framework when we talk with our guest. My guest tonight is Paul Reinig. Are you with us, Paul?
Yes. Good evening, David.
Good evening. So glad to have you with us. I read a little bit of your story, and I want to allow you to tell it, but you have one of the most profound walkabout experiences that I've heard in a very long time. And the concept of walkabout in indigenous cultures, walkabout is from Aboriginal culture, is the idea that you go off into the wilderness, but into a situation, not having any idea how you were going to be supported, having nothing with you, and you just go out to have your experience of whatever comes at you and whatever comes to you until you can truly and profoundly experience God and experience the support of divinity. And your story is incredible. So start anywhere, my friend.
Well, thank you for your kind words. Your metaphysical musing actually brought something to mind that I would like to start off with, and that is
sure.
Just the other, I guess, one of those golden rule phrases that comes from Scripture, which is, love thy neighbor as thyself.
Yes.
And now that particular one has played a major role for me in recent times, because the real question of how much can you really love someone and be kind and, you know, offer your heart to others, it really has everything to do with how much you are able to take kindness towards yourself, you see.
Yes,
and this has been a life lesson for me. I really didn't understand that until it's really just been about the last 4 or 5 years that it's starting to begin to unfold for me, that loving myself is actually the most important thing that I could ever do, as long as I'm living on this planet, because there's no way I'm going to be able to love anyone else. And so with that, this story, and I might also mention that what I share tonight about my own background, my own story, it really is just a story. It's not really me. It doesn't really reflect me per se necessarily, but it reflects the experiences that I have gone through while I've been into this particular physical body in this lifetime.
Right.
So I started out in life in a very strong Catholic family. My dad had 10 kids, and every one of them he put through parochial schools so that we had the nuns and the priests and all that. And that was quite, the intensity of that, particularly because in my case, it was, I don't know what it's like these days, but back in the 60s while I was growing up, there was a lot of focus on obedience.
Yes.
And punishment. And so I learned very quickly that I really needed to be a good little boy, or I was in big trouble. And that caused a lot of inner voices to start flowing, where I would start judging myself for anything that I thought wasn't being a good little boy. And I basically just never really had much of a good feeling for myself. And that's where everything started. At that point, I lost confidence in myself, if I had it in the first place. I'm not sure I really ever did. Kids would pick on me. One of those kind of kids where you're an easy target because you have low self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that allowed me to I was creating experiences for myself that caused me to become introverted. And, by the time I got into my teens, really didn't really have the capacity to find girlfriends or anything like that. Don't get me wrong, that was desperately something I would have wanted, but it's just that I was sort of like a counselor once later on in my life explained it as he said I was sort of caught up into a, how did he put that? I was inside of an enigma, inside of a cocoon. And then that's kind of the way he saw that he had to begin to deal with that kind of an individual, and how is he going to begin to open me up? So graduating from high school was a very traumatic moment for me, because even though I had that kind of introvertedness and was a fearful of people and to some degree, when you're around people, and even if they're making fun of you or whatever, there is a certain amount of attention there, you know, where it gives me, you know, gave me some sense of purpose, or, and that isn't the word. It was more of a sense of that I exist. You know, if everybody had just totally ignored me all the time, I think that would have been much worse. So by the time when I graduated from high school, now there was nobody around, and that's when I started freaking out, because I really was faced with myself, actually, and I really didn't understand myself at all, and I was sort of like wandering. At that time, I was actually working a janitor job, just had no desire to go to college, because I just didn't have any sense of purpose or what is it that I would even be interested in studying. And so along came, about a couple years later, when I was 21 years old, the Unification Church, or better known as the Moonies. I'm not really sure the younger listeners would be familiar with the Moonies, because as far as I know, there really hasn't been much in the media for the last couple of decades.
Yeah, well, but it kind of create the picture, because those of us who are of a similar age to you know what that was about, but you're right. Most people haven't heard of it for at least 10 or 15 years.
Exactly. Well, the picture was that back in the 70s, this Korean man named Sun Myung-moon became very popular among youth all around the world. He actually attracted literally millions of followers, or at least that's what we were told anyway. But his outlook on life was that he was the second coming of Christ, and that it was time to build the kingdom of heaven on earth. That Jesus hadn't really been able to do that because he was crucified. So, you know, he lost his opportunity, and now the second coming is another individual. And he had a tremendous theology based strictly on Scripture to back everything up, and it just absolutely fascinated me. I just jumped whole hog into it. Because, well, for one thing, I was very much caught up into my mind, because I was so afraid of life and myself, which means I was afraid of others. Then I basically used my mind to keep myself in a comfort zone. And the mind can really be stimulated by dogma, as we know. So I just immediately wanted to learn this. It was called The Divine Principle. He had an actual book, a scripture, and I learned it. I got handpicked by him within a year and a half of having joined to become one of his state leaders, and he sent me down to Louisiana, and I now suddenly was in charge of this small church center of about 8 individuals. And so that was actually when things became really challenging for me, because here's this introverted guy who doesn't understand much about anything, really doesn't understand how to take care of others, which is really what Moon wanted us to do as leaders, was to be there to take care of others. His concept was based on biblical Old Testament Cain and Abel type perspectives, or Jacob and Esau, and he had this idea that Jacob actually was able to embrace his brother and win his brother over, whereas his brother had basically just been wanting to kill him. But Jacob had the means to embrace his brother in a way that caused him eventually, according to Scripture, was that he fell on his neck and wept. And Moon used that very strongly. It was that kind of concept of that the leader is the it was called the Abel position, but in this analogy, it would have been the Jacob position, and that the other followers who are coming under that particular leader are in the Esau position. So they may not like their leader, but then again, the leader is responsible to completely love those individuals enough to win them over. And so it was my first, I was really being pushed to open myself up, and it was extremely challenging. And I wasn't actually very successful at it. There's other other situations going on as well in this dynamics, because if you've got a Christ figure as your, you know, what you believe in, then you basically are going to do whatever he tells you.
Right.
So I could not follow my own heart. The dogma wouldn't allow it. And meanwhile, he believed in matching people with others and then bringing them into marriage. So that happened to me. In 1979, I was in this big room of about 1,000 individuals, the women on one side, the men on the other. And he would walk up and down the aisle, and he'd look at one person and have them stand up. And then he'd go looking around at the opposite sex, that group, and he'd find somebody that he thought was apparently appropriate. So he'd have them stand up. And then he'd bring the two of you together, and he'd shove you off. And basically you'd go sign a book, bow before a picture of him and his wife, and you are now a matched couple. And that's what happened to me.
That's so totally amazing to me that it was done in that larger group, and that everybody gave him that power. Is incredible.
Yeah, well, that's what dogma does. It's when you believe in something that's coming from a higher authority, mm-hmm. then you place the human in a small place, and you feel that you're not worthy to do anything other than what that higher authority expects of you.
Right.
And that's what my life journey has learned. I've learned most of anything is that all of that is a total illusion. The authority is actually deep inside of myself, as it is inside of yourself. And for all the listeners, there's no one who could really give you any guidance best than your own heart. So he had this rule that you had to be separated for 3.5 years after a matching, so that's what we ended up doing. And then by the time that period ended, he called for this big wedding in Madison Square Garden. So I was in this 2,075 couple wedding, and that was actually quite interesting. But at the same time, it was a very much of a trepidation time for me, because
sure.
I knew that after that wedding, I was now actually going to have to start this relationship on a physical level with this woman, and it just absolutely scared the hell out of me.
Sure.
I didn't like her, I didn't like the way she looked. There was nothing about her that appealed to me. But as I look back on it now, David, I realize that I was actually giving myself the experience of being confronted with a tremendous amount of what I call emotional aspects.
Mm-hmm.
Those aspects are created when we are in a situation in which we go through a lot of trauma, and we don't know or we're not aware in that moment of the trauma that we actually have all inside ourselves what we need to make it through that trauma. It doesn't have to be a traumatic situation at all. But we don't understand that in the moment, and so the emotions freak out. And given the fact that we're not really all that excited about freaking out emotions, the nature of a human is to push them away. And so once they're pushed away, they basically get caught up into the psyche someplace. And now they have become what I call an emotional aspect. And they are literally a creation of yours. They are energetically tied to you, and they will always be energetically tied to you, whether this lifetime or any other lifetime. They will stay with you until the time in which you can be for that emotion what you couldn't be in the moment that you created it, if that makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense. I like that way of putting it. So
go ahead.
In that moment, you can accept that aspect of yourself, love it, forgive it, release it, and move on.
Yes, and from my perspective, what happens is it actually integrates. In other words, it doesn't really leave. It just becomes balanced mm-hmm. enough so that it doesn't really need to act out anymore.
Right.
The reason that, you know, we talked earlier about the law of attraction. People will come into our world and, you know, based on what's going on the inside, And so from my perspective, that's inside going ons has everything to do with your emotional aspects. So you will literally draw into your world, whether it's at your work or, you know, even at the when you're out shopping or whatever it is that you're choosing to do, you will draw into your world specific individuals who are there designed to trigger your emotional aspects because those aspects are seeking resolution.
Right.
And so
yeah, one of the things I frequently say is that the people who are most difficult in your life are the people you have to thank the most, even though they're the people you absolutely don't want to thank.
Exactly. Well, and so you're actually bringing up another thing that I learned, and it's perhaps one of the more challenging things, and that is the power, really, of acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
And just being simply okay. Because it's, you know, that old attaché of what you resist persists.
Mm-hmm.
I've found so much of that where, you know, the emotions are there, you resist them, and so they only just grow, and the intensity of it gets stronger. And so that basically what that means is whatever those individuals are that are triggering them, it just gets more intense between you and them. If a person can understand that it actually has nothing to do with that individual, literally nothing, except for the fact that they're the ones who triggered you. But whatever it is that you're triggered about has nothing to do with them.
Right.
It has everything to do with an emotional aspect that once upon a time, this lifetime or another, you created. And if you can understand that, then you have to take the moment and time to come into yourself and embrace that aspect. And I've developed some tools that I've used that have helped me tremendously in doing so, and it helps for that integration process to occur. And once that happens, an amazing thing happens. That individual who was triggering you no longer seems to be an issue for you. They either actually move out of your life,
right,
or you start literally becoming friends with them. And
yep.
This I've had this experience.
Yep. Well, I want to hear more about the tools in the second half of the show, but right now I want to make sure that people know how to contact you. I know you have a website.
I do. It's www.masteringtruelove.com.
And I actually have
some products as well. Recently, I just published a book called The True Love Handbook, which is really where those tools are going to be found, and a lot more as well.
Terrific. So, and we'll talk more about those in the second half of the show. I also want to make sure that people can call in. I'm hoping that we have some listeners that will want to join the conversation and ask you questions. So if you would like to call in, that number is 248-809-3475. 248-809-3475. And we don't get lots of callers on this show, I think, because of the hour, but when we do, they have absolutely fascinating questions, and it's a lot of fun. So in the second half, let's talk a whole lot more about all these techniques that you've been developing so that people can get a picture of where you've gone, because, you know, you started in a very extreme version of what a lot of us had experienced in childhood and in high school, for that matter, and have really done an incredible transformation. So, I had something else I was going to tell you. It'll come back to me during the break. So, everybody stay with you know how that is.
Are you taking the break now, or do we have any time left?
We have just a couple of seconds left.
Okay.
We will be back on the Farkas Files on Empower Radio. Don't go nowhere. Stay with us.
lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on, and lost cats stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See? That's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors
Let's say you
Foundation,
want to throw the perfect
the
party for your twin daughters. But even if the clown you hired doesn't dazzle, and the pony doesn't give rides, it can still be the perfect party because kids don't always see things the way you see them.
Best party ever, Mom!
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of siblings in foster care who'll take you just as you are. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
There might be danger.
It's always wildfire season somewhere in America. Nearly 9 out of 10 wildfires nationwide are caused by the carelessness of humans and could be prevented. But together, we can make a difference.
Come on! You can do it!
Help protect our forest friends.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
To find out more, log on to SmokeyBear.com. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, the National Association of State Foresters, and the Ad Council.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with Paul Reinig, our guest this evening, who has an incredible story of transformation and his walkabout, his path, his life experiences going from his Catholic upbringing to being part of the Unification Church and the Moonies, as they were called at the time, and now really having his own healing practice and process that he's developed. So you were going to tell us a little bit about the methods that you've developed.
Yes. When I finally got up the courage to move away from the Moonies, which was really after about 23 years involvement,
wow,
which is an indication of how much self-loathing was going on there. I probably soaked up every spiritual book that was out there. It was basically during the last couple of years of the last century and the first 5, 6, 7, 8 years of this century. And then along around 2006, 2007, it just started hitting me that the bottom line here is that I have to learn how to love myself. No one else is going to be able to teach me how to do that or show me how to do that without me first finding myself within. The books are all wonderful, and they're all pointing me in that direction, but at the end of the day, I was faced with myself. So really, David, the first tool that I realized was more important than any other tool was breathing.
Mm.
Because breathing actually allows one to come back into tune with their own soul. You know, if we weren't breathing, we wouldn't be alive. And so if we take that deep breath and bring the energy of really the energy, which is life itself, in, and it fills our body up, then it takes the focus away from outside or from the mind, which is really where my biggest, I was so caught up into my mind. And it's been a big challenge. I mean, I'm still doing my best every day to keep that balance between the heart and the mind. But there was a period where the mind just wanted to come in and just dominate everything, even no matter how much breathing I seemed to want to do. And so I had to really take a lot of time to do a lot of breathing. And that's the best tool that one can do. That breathing is going to allow a person to start feeling their own soul and a connection with that soul. And that connection with your soul is what I call compassion, because it's that compassion really that you're going to need to embrace those emotional aspects when they are being triggered by the outside.
Mm-hmm.
because the resolution that those emotional aspects seek is really completely based on compassion. In other words, just like a little kid who is hurting, he doesn't want to be told to stop being the way he is, like, you know, shut up, kid, that kind of thing. That isn't really going to be what's going to cause him to feel warmed and embraced. What's going to cause him to feel warmed and embraced is acceptance and a feeling that he's being honored, mm-hmm. and that there's some compassion flowing his way. So I had to take some time to find that compassion within me for myself, for all these parts of me. And I had tons of these emotional, there's not enough time here to talk about them. And incredible triggers that I would get of where I'd be sobbing intensely, or trepidation, or rage, mm-hmm. and just to name a few. I mean, there's the loneliness, all the gamut of emotions. And I've had to breathe into those emotions and then find the compassion. It was a big, a challenging thing. But eventually I started realizing that I had been using some tools that I never even thought about it. But I do a lot of journaling, and it just came out of my journal one day. I believe this was in 2008, that I kind of mapped out four tools that I had been doing, and made it very simplified or distilled down to very simple phrases. And the first phrase was yes. And yes means I accept, I allow. And mm-hmm. that allowance is once the breathing is there, now you're in a state where you can begin to simply allow. And you're saying yes to life. And yes to life means whatever life is bringing you in this now moment, and it may be trepidation. It may be anger, it may be sadness, loneliness. But if that's what your life is in this now moment, say yes to it. Allow it. Because resistance is only simply going to cause it to... resistance can actually push it away so that it has the appearance of having disappeared.
Right.
But we both know, of course, that it finds its way back into our lives.
Gives new meaning to the Star Trek term... resistance is futile.
Yes, exactly. All right, well, that was the first phrase. And then once I'm allowing whatever is to be whatever it is, the second phrase was thank you, which brings up the gratitude or appreciation. I'm expressing thank you or appreciation to whatever this is. I'm not only allowing it, but I'm appreciating it.
Mm-hmm.
That appreciation then is... beginning to bring that compassionate part of me to the surface. And I've had experiences where I'd be feeling just incredible fear. And while that fear is taking place, at the very same time, this compassion would be bubbling up from within.
Mm-hmm.
And that compassion would sort of have a voice within itself that would be saying something to the effect of, everything's going to be okay. You know, there's nothing to worry about. And it led me right into the third phrase, which was, I love you. I love you, which is basically saying, compassion. I have compassion for you, and I love you. So it's really acceptance, and then appreciation, and then compassion. And with those three, I found that these aspects, the fear, whatever the emotions were that I was going through, would begin to settle down. They begin to feel, they started listening to whatever it was that I was telling them. So I'd go on and talk all kinds of things. You know, I love you, it's going to be okay. I love you, Paul, you know, whatever. Individuals can find the perfect words for themselves. But I just basically encourage people to start with those phrases and then see what your heart has to say to that aspect. And just let it come flowing out. And the aspect, it may not happen the first time, by the way, but because the mm-hmm. aspects basically want to know that you're real. They really want to know that. I mean, that's, you can't be inauthentic to your aspects and hope or expect them to integrate or come home into your heart. So it takes some time and breathing and developing that compassion so that you do become more real. You become more authentic, the authentic you. And as the authentic you can then stand in your I am-ness, which is the fourth phrase. I am that I am. I am that I am. I'm the lover. I'm the God. I'm the mother, father. I'm whatever it is that that aspect feels like it's aching for. I'm it. And so I would embrace it with that, you know, if I was extremely lonely and wishing that I had a partner next to me to comfort me, then I would let those emotions know, I am the lover that you're seeking, and I can embrace you in the same way, and that helps to those emotions then find their way eventually to more balance. So it's a process, and it's taken me a long time. Another thing you mentioned in your beginning in your metaphysical muse about judge not lest you be judged, and that was such a big heavy thing for me, was that I was constantly judging myself. I would these emotions would come up, and then I wouldn't feel like I was able to take care of them, and then I would judge myself for that. Well, of course, that's just like beating a dead horse.
Right.
And there's nothing productive there for me.
Well, it's interesting. What you're describing has been described as inner child work. You know, it's having that conversation with the part of you that's having those emotions that were never resolved, which usually started out in childhood. And it's that part of yourself is still having those experiences. And now you as the adult are able to have a conversation and create the support that resolves those issues for that part of your personality. It's very powerful work. Let's give that phone number out one more time and see if we've got people with questions. It's 248-809-3475. 248-809-3475. Give us a call. Ask some questions. Join the conversation. So the work that you do is very intense and requires people to get in touch with those emotions. So is this work that you do in individual counseling or in groups or self-guided? How do you work with people?
At the moment, it is in private sessions individually.
Mm-hmm.
I have this sort of, I'm working in my imagination with something which I'm hoping will come to pass one of these days related to dance, because I'm a huge dancer, and it's just another one of my tools, and that is expression, because the soul really wants to be expressed. That's really probably the main thing that it's doing on this planet, is just having the experience of being expressed in whatever way the human is choosing to do.
Right.
And one of the things I love to do is to dance. And I've been discovering in recent times that integration of aspects can occur through some intense dancing. And I've just had these amazing experiences where, I'm talking about, very individual dancing, where it's almost like I wonder sometimes if I don't have some American Indians in my background, because or Native Americans. Because I sometimes when I'm dancing, I can see almost in my mind's eye a Native American dancing, and this sort of they would be dancing in a powwow or like doing a rain dance or something, and I'm just dancing this intense dance to whatever beats there. I mean, actually, just a drum is enough. And in the meantime, if emotions are there, I can connect to the compassion and speak with those emotions right in the midst of the dance. So I'm sort of putting something like that together.
Right. Are you familiar with trance dancing?
I haven't heard the term, no.
Might be something to look into, because it uses a very similar kind of approach. And there's actually trance music that's used for that kind of stuff that's actually popular in some clubs. But the idea is to just let your body move with your eyes closed, have whatever comes up. And to work with it. And typically, if it's done in a workshop or something, there are people around to support anybody who really has something overwhelming going on. And I had not experienced that until I happened to be in a group where that was one of the activities they did, and it was extremely powerful.
It really sounds interesting. I'll definitely look into that.
Yeah. The other thing, which I'm sure you experienced both in your Catholic experiences and probably in the Unification Church, is that the repetition of anything with a ritualized motion makes it more powerful and makes it take hold in the mind more quickly. It creates the habit patterns and the synapses in the brain more quickly. So in many religions, there's a specific movement you do at a specific point in saying the prayers, and that's repeated over and over again, often with other things. So in the Catholic Mass, there's incense being burned at those times as well. So the multisensory approach really is very, very powerful in changing anything, that either setting in place a belief or in helping to open it up. Movement is very, very important.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. So as far as my work goes, at the moment I have been doing individual sessions, and those are available through my website, masteringtruelove.com.
Mm-hmm.
But I think more than anything, over the last 5 years, I was drawn to write, since I had mentioned I did a lot of journaling.
Mm-hmm.
And I discovered in 2001, actually, that I had a box of about 45 journals sitting there that was obviously a story waiting to be told. And so I put that together into a memoir. It took about 6 years to distill it down into, I think it's about 252 pages. But it's called Grand and Glorious Adventure, and I have that available on my website. And then I put out something else that I did as part of the Moonies was, he literally created a seminary in upstate New York, in which over a period of several years, he eventually got accredited by the state of New York so that it became an official seminary. And it was right around that time of accreditation that I was able to enter. It was from 1991 to 1993. So I actually came out of there with a graduate degree in religion.
Mm.
Now you might understand that literally was the beginning of the end. It took about 5 years for me to literally say no more. But studying religion, I started realizing that you know, we've all just basically been making it up as we go along. And you know, whoever gets inspired, it's their soul is inspiration. I mean, there's the divine speaks in so many different ways to everyone.
Right.
So at any rate, to make a long story short, I had this connection with the Apostle Paul that I just knew I needed to say something about it. And so in 2010, I put out a book called Apostle Paul, The Untold Story. It brings up some issues related to the apostle that have probably never really been addressed, some that have. But most of the information in there came from either my own pen or from other individuals who were channeling information to me about the apostle. And then recently in March this year came out the True Love Handbook, How to End Suffering, Become Your Own Best Friend, and Begin Living Your Dreams. And as far as I'm concerned, this is sort of like the third of the trilogy, because it's the culmination of everything I've learned up until this point. It's 300 pages, so it's got a lot of stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
There's four sections, and the first section is basically just going into where we've been as a human race, who we are, where we are going, all my perspective, introspection, or my perceptionist things. But I discuss what I call the evolution of consciousness and how we as humanity have come to the point in now 2012 in which we are literally moving into a whole new paradigm of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'm not the only one that understands that. And I just kind of go through history in a very simple, distilled down way, and show how the consciousness shifted at certain key moments in time. And this is fascinating to me, so I put it in there. But mainly, the second section goes into the tools that I already outlined in this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
The third section then goes into some very personal experiences I had with working with those tools. And there's some very, you know, when I say personal, I mean personal. Some people might call it their dirty laundry. But I put it all in there because, you know, once you've integrated stuff, it just really doesn't have any emotional attachment there. So I'm not defined by it any longer, and therefore it doesn't matter to me. People can know about that part of me. It doesn't matter to me. And then lastly, the last section is just basically going into some more about how to more go into depth about to master true love in your own life. So that's offered. All of those are all offered on my website.
Well, that's a very powerful book, and the way it's laid out is fascinating. But, you know, what you said about no longer, in effect, being embarrassed by those parts of your life and those experiences in life that you used to see as traumatic and frustrating and embarrassing, that's the nature of true emotional healing. When the energy is completely released from it, it's you're right. It's just a story. It's just something that you went through. Isn't that interesting now?
Precisely. And,
yeah. And that's for most people, the thought of having their dirty laundry out in public, as the saying goes, is terrifying. It's totally terrifying.
Indeed.
You know, thinking of what could be done with it. And, you know, of course, the reason that those things can be done with it, in quotation marks, is that they're still holding on energy to it and they care about it. If you don't care about it, it's like, yeah, okay, tell that story.
Exactly.
Been there, done that. Got
so
the
I have a whole chapter called Going Beyond Definitions, because truly, the way I look at things, and you mentioned it in the very beginning of this, in our conversation, that we're cramming a lot into this lifetime. And I see this lifetime as the sort of a designated lifetime for us to integrate everything that we've ever been through in all the other lifetimes, so that those emotions from whatever in the other lifetimes that never got resolved, they're all sort of in a very sped up, almost quantum way, happening, and that's why the energies in the world right now are so intense.
Well, and they're...
You know, I was just going to say, and so the key is actually going beyond the definitions of how we've defined our stories or even, you know, those emotions.
Right.
And once we are able to start going beyond that, then you basically realize what's all that's left is just the I am. That's who we are.
Right. It's... Until you get there, though, it's very difficult to see that space.
I totally understand.
And understand that it's... I know you do. And that process of going from... Well, one of the ways I look at it is contraction versus expansion. You know, the model and the person that you described as the good Catholic boy and the good Moonie is a model of contraction, of being very small and fitting within a very precisely shaped container. And the model of healing is about expansion, and not only an initial expansion out of the tiny box in the particular shape, but constant expansion and continuing expansion, that understanding that love is infinite and self-love is infinite, and isn't this a cool ride? you know, another overlay to all of this, though, is those of us that are here at this point in the transition of the planet are also healing all of these issues for everyone who's ever been in a physical body. We came here to heal it all. And sometimes that's really overwhelming. And right now, all of those aspects, as you call them, are rising out of the shadows into the light to be cleared, to be healed in whatever ways that each of us learns how to do it. And boy, does that look like chaos. You know, it makes the world look like everything is totally coming apart when really that stuff has always been going on. It's just been hidden. And now it's rising to the surface where it can be seen and loved and through that love, it will just dissipate. The energy won't be held in it anymore. So it's a very powerful time, but there is a Chinese curse that says, may you live in interesting times.
You're a very wise man, David, and I couldn't have, what you just shared, I couldn't have shared it any better. That's exactly what's going on in the world, and well, that's why it does appear to be chaotic, and it's why I have great compassion for other individuals who are going through this process, or there's some actually who are just barely beginning to wake up, and yet they don't understand that they're in this beginning awakening moment,
right?
And they're looking for, you know, whatever. I have some videos on YouTube, for example, just to give you an example, and I keep continuously getting you know, messages from YouTube. So and so has subscribed to your channel. Just every day I get one, two, three. I mean, it's like there's people out there that they want to get some understanding of what in the heck is going on, and they're going to be drawn to whoever. I mean, there's tons of others out there.
And there are people that are waking up that are terrified.
That's exactly right. Yes,
because everything that they thought was true, even if they're just getting an inkling that it's all lies, it's not true, that's not what's really going on here. There's way more to life, way more to everything in existence, and they don't know what to do with it. You know, everything they've been told is wrong. And that's one of the things I say a lot. Most of what we've ever been told is not only wrong, it's backwards. you can take most things and just reverse them and get closer to the truth.
You know, it was appropriate at the time that we were told it. It was what the consciousness was willing to accept.
Yes, yes, that's true. But that continued well past the point where that was a useful tool. And that's because, you know, when you have a large organization and you have power, you don't want to let go of power.
Exactly.
I want to thank you so much for being on the show. This has been, I would say, great fun, but way, way past great fun. You know, it's a profound story, and the work that you do is wonderful. So people can contact you at your website. Why don't you give that URL again?
Yes, it's www.masteringtruelove.com.
And my guest tonight.
I've got all kinds of tools on my website as well. In fact, I have a blog which you can find through the website with over 60 articles in there. And
fantastic.
I used to actually have my own radio show, and there's archives available there as well.
Great. Well, Paul Reinig is my guest. Thank you so much for being on the show tonight, Paul.
Thank you for having me, David.
It's been a pleasure. For those of you that are listening and would like to know who this David Franklin Farkas guy is, you can find out more about my healing and clearing work at househealing.com. And if you look at the contact page, you'll see every conceivable technological way to get in touch with me, including my online appointment calendar, which will get you a 20-minute complimentary conversation with me where I can take a look at what's going on and see how my work could be helpful to you. So please feel free to contact me through the website, househealing.com, and we can, as we say in the old neighborhood, we can talk. So for now, this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. I hope you'll be with us again next Thursday. Have a great week.